Well, we start at the beginning. Hammond maps have been around since I was a kid. Just how did it all begin for the Hammond family and for the world?
Well, the story goes back 92 years, Don, to when my great-grandfather worked for a competitive map company. He was a salesman, and he had the Eastern Regional Territory, which included New York City, and I guess he had the gall to request a $5 a week raise, and he was turned down, so he went out and hired a couple of cartographers on his own and created some maps, one of which was a new projection, and rolled up the maps and went on the road and began to sell them in an instant company, a little entrepreneurial basis for the company.
Because you're not going to name that original map company.
Well, it's still around, Ray McNally, and we're very friendly competitors. I'm not sure that they wouldn't have rather paid the $5 a week way back when and gotten us off of the competitors' list, but we compete well together.
Now, you say it went back 92 years. So what year was that?
1900.
It started in 1900. What was it exactly? Was it an atlas?
At that point, it was a map. It was a wall map, and my great-grandfather created a two-sided map, one of which was the United States and one of which was the world, and the world was the one which had the new projection, and he rolled it up and put it under his arm and actually went out towards the west. He got back into Chicago. He started in Chicago and swept east, and he sold quite a few orders in Chicago, which probably didn't make the Chicago Map Company very happy, but he booked enough orders to really produce these things, and off he went. And the first real order that we had was what we call a premium. It's a giveaway to instill some dynamics behind somebody going out and doing something, and it was a map of the United States for a railroad freight company. And he sold it to the freight company in volume, and on the map of the U.S. was overlaid the rail tracks of where this company went, and it was given away to their clients, which was essentially freight forwarders. So they put this thing up on the wall, and at a glance, they knew whether or not this rail company went to where they were going. So in effect, it was a great big business card, and it worked very well, and we've been in that business as well as others ever since then. Maps are often used to convey information, both geographic, political, or in this case, commercial.
What do you mean by new projection?
The projection is the mathematical process of taking a surface, which in this case is of a sphere, which is a curved surface, and putting it on a flat surface, which is the page of the map, the page of the book. And when that happens, you necessarily have distortion. It's like taking an orange and cutting it in half and taking out the inside and pushing it down flat, and what you get is wrinkles. And so mathematically, you have to undo those wrinkles or accept those wrinkles. And depending upon what it is you're trying to show, you end up with different map projections. In effect, you're putting a light at the inside of the globe, letting it pass out through the globe and onto a wall beyond it, which gives you literally a projection of the globe. But if you can see that in your mind, you can see that as the light passes through the outer limits of the globe, it in effect stretches them out. The best example, I think, of this distortion is what's known as the Mercator projection, which is what many, many people saw on classroom walls as they grew up, and it shows a map that was really designed for navigators, and what it allows the navigator to do is set his compass and go from point A to his destination, his starting point to his destination, at the correct angle, but in the process of keeping the angles correct as they conform to the angles on the Earth, it's called a conformal type projection, you necessarily distort the distances between those two points, and for instance, Greenland, which is a relatively small island. It's approximately the size of the east coast of the U.S., east of the Mississippi. And it makes it look approximately the same size of all of North America, including Canada. And that is a distortion that, as long as you understand what you're looking at, is quite acceptable. There's nothing wrong about it. But what is wrong is that the size of the continents become very distorted as you move either north or south of the equator. So what you want to know when you're starting to make a map is what is the purpose for the creation of this map. Is it for a navigator, in which case this type map would be fine? If it's for someone who wants to measure distances from point to point, it's absolutely the wrong map. And what we have just done with the help of a very good friend and a major scientific mind, that being Mitchell Feigenbaum, who's a mathematics fellow who discovered the rules behind chaos and fractal geometry, has created a projection which is called the optimal conformal, and the technology behind it is something in advance of fluid dynamics. It's the kind of mathematics you would need to design a sweep-wing airplane. But what it produces for the user is a map on which you can measure the points from A to B and get a very true measurement of what is the distance between those points. So if you're flying, you really want to know how far it is between those points and fuel up to make sure you make it.
Even though the map is horizontal.
That's correct.
Yeah. Now, I've seen maps that in the past that look like they might have been taken right off of a globe because there are triangular elements cut out on both the upper and lower edges. I would assume if you were to actually cut out that map and put it together, it would be in the form of a globe.
That's correct.
Now, is there distortion if you lay that out flat?
Well, what you're doing is it's called an interrupted projection, and you're interrupting the contiguity between the points. You're getting, in effect, little arrows that go up into the towards the top of the map. And so, again, if you measure the distances between those points, you're quite incorrect. But as you bring them back together again and reform the globe, then, again, you have correctness. So, yes, that's just a different type of projection. That's called an interrupted projection. Again, what is it you're trying to do with the map, and what is the size of the area that you're looking at? And that's really the first step the cartographer needs to look at. What is the purpose for the map, and what is the area that's being involved? If it's the whole world, you're necessarily having a maximum amount of distortion. If you're talking about a relatively small area, let's say the state of New York, as it relates to the whole sphere, it's a relatively small piece of real estate, so you have much less distortion than you would if you're trying to encompass the whole world.
Now, has Hammond done the road maps?
Oh, yeah, very much so. We actually got out of the road map, the folding map business, in the mid-30s, but we have four different road atlases, which is the best way to cover the entire United States is to have an atlas, have them all bound together, and have all that information at your hand. It's still a good idea if you're in a downtown city to have the folding out map, but there, if you had the whole U.S. at that scale, you'd have a car full of maps.
Well, what's the difference between a road map and the kind of maps or that you have in the Atlas of the World?
What we primarily are looking at is the political situation in a world atlas. We've also included topography. Political means that the lines or the places were created by man. It's a political decision that New York City has certain bounds. It's a political situation that Moscow is exactly where it is. It also involves geopolitics, of course. People have to be in a city, so the cities grow where people are, and they generally grow where the transportation is, and so there's usually water nearby, at least certainly in the earlier cities, where you needed the water in order to have goods move in and out. The topography is the mountains, and traditionally it's been difficult to have both, to have a lot of type, which is what Hammond is traditionally known for, to have a lot of political information. So if you're looking for the town in Iowa where your grandmother was born, it will be there. However, if you add mountains, let's go to Switzerland instead of Iowa, if there are mountains there and you have a lot of type and you're also showing mountains, they obliterate each other. And again, the more information you put into a map, the more chaos happens in that map. So another major task of the cartographer is to know what to leave out. He has access to virtually every piece of information about that land. His job is to know what to leave out so that you have the clearest, most concise map of that area.
Well, I noticed that in the Atlas of the World, in many of the maps you left out the city of Baltimore, which is a major East Coast city, and I thought, as I was reading looking at the map, I said, how could you leave out Baltimore? It's, major port city, just, I guess, for simplicity's sake. Huh?
Well, what we do is we make sure that the map of the greatest scale, which is to say the biggest picture, the closest up to the globe, that the major cities are there. I'm actually not familiar with the fact we left that Baltimore, if that's
on on several of the maps.
But if you look at the one of the largest scale,
oh, yes,
it will definitely be there.
It's there. So how can you leave out a city of a million people?
Sorry, what page are we looking at here?
Well, it's there because, I used to work in Baltimore. That's why I was looking through the East Coast, it's been left out.
Well,
I'm not.
You're taking me by surprise. I have to look at it.
I just wonder what the folks in Baltimore would think.
Well, if that's in fact the case, obviously second printing will be taken care of. But as with the index, we would take a given point and index it at the map where it appears in the greatest scale for the greatest amount of clarity. So again, if you have competing,
it's going to take me a while to find. Well, here even on this great here's a map of North America. You have Washington, Philadelphia, New York.
Well, what you're looking at there is what's called a terrascape map, and the function of the terrascape map is to show the terrain, and the cities are dropped in, only the largest cities are put in there just to give you a sense of being able to line up a map with the globe. If you see that, that also has the terrain underneath the ocean. It has all of the land forms under the ocean. If you look at a traditional wall map, you'll see that it looks like the continents are kind of floating in the ocean, and that's not what happens. What you're really looking at with anything which is land, whether it's a large continent like North America, which you're looking at, or the island of Hawaii, you're really looking at the top of a land mass. In the case of Hawaii, that is the tallest mountain in the world. It's obviously not the highest off of sea level, but from the base where it emerges from the sea floor past the water level, of the ocean, it is the tallest mountain in the world. So what you're looking at there is a map which is intended to show you the entire terrain as if you drain the water out of the oceans. It's a unique and trademark process that we have.
Well, let's go back. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover, so let's go back a little bit. When was the first Hammond Atlas produced?
It was back in the early part of this century. It was probably 1904, and we actually
have.
I've seen a page from it. I have one.
Resemble the current atlases?
Well, visually, it's much less attractive. What amazes me is how relatively accurate maps were back in those days, and even several hundred years before that, where it predates the sophisticated information which is now available to us, such as satellite imagery. They were basically learning the shape of continents by sailing around them and through triangulation and other mathematical processes, calculating what this body of land looked like. But they really didn't know. They couldn't, you know, get up an airplane or a balloon and look down. But they are not nearly as sophisticated, but they are art. They have this, or it has, and in this case it was China, it has the look of hand-done art. It was a by hand process of map making.
What size of the atlas? Same size?
Oh, I never really measured it, but it's approximately, you know, it's the 9x12 ish size, but it's opened up, so it's double that. But it's interesting to see not only the scribing techniques which were used, but also the paper and the screens and the type style. Certainly graphics have improved radically even in the last number of years, where now we have color newspapers. That's a fairly new situation. Color has traditionally been used to convey information, and newspapers have recently realized this, where you can look at the blue section and know exactly what is, you know, what to expect in that. So it gives you the ability to get in and out of that paper with the greatest speed, and that's the way we have indexed and arranged the information in this atlas. It's fantastic for the romantic who loves to travel around the world but only has an hour a night to do so. So you can sit in a chair and just find the slopes and go in your mind shushing down the Alps, or you could visit the Southwest where cowboys and Indians were, you know, a century or so ago. It really gives you the ability also, however, to find the town where your grandma was born. It's just a tool with which you can travel the world, or you can follow the news. You know, the horrors of war, you can flip open an atlas, hopefully ours, and really get a sense of what politically caused this dispute, which, you know, you're reading about in the newspaper or seeing on television.
What amazes me sometimes when I read these I guess you can say read a map. You don't really look.
Well,
I guess you look at a map. I always say read.
It depends really on what you're using for. You can read a map. You know, you're getting the lay of the land, but you don't sit down and read it from top left to bottom right like you would.
Not necessarily. I mean, I used to be a map buff. And my father would bring home highway maps when they gave highway maps, because he traveled a lot through the Midwest. And I had a huge collection of highway maps, and I would just sit there and pore over those maps.
And you travel in your mind. You were the armchair traveler, the bedroom floor traveler.
So I would know towns and cities that nobody else ever heard of. But some of these maps that go back to the 17th and 18th centuries, while obviously primitive, it amazes me that they were able to identify the basic shapes of the continents. And you wonder, they had these little boats with sails, and you wonder how they were able to do it.
Well, that goes back to the processes that are almost no longer in existence, which is the ability to mark points and observe stars, and through triangulation and grid drawings, you can actually come out and do this from ground level. But of course, it's a lot more accurate to get high above the land and look down and measure it that way. But it is impressive how well maps that were drawn even 400, 500, 600 years ago depicted the areas they're showing, in some cases pretty close to the whole world.
Now, the first Hammond Atlas came out in the early 1900s. It was the product of your grandfather's work.
Great-grandfather's
work. And your grandfather became part of the firm.
That's correct.
And then your father became part of the firm.
Yes, that's true, although there was also an uncle in there between the two. It went in order: my great-grandfather, my grandfather, my great-uncle, my father, my uncle, and now me. It's quite coincidental that we've all been named Hammond.
Well, what qualifications does one have to go into this kind of work? Well, for example, your own particular training. You don't have to be a cartographer.
I am not a cartographer. My training is in business management. I went to law school, but I love maps. And it's amazing to me how many people I talk to from the number of backgrounds that they come from who love maps. I know how to utilize maps. I know how to get maps to the people who can best use them. Hopefully I know how to manage the company, but a cartographer needs the skills of a great organization. They need to be able to research the data, so they have to be, careful about detail. They have to know something about mathematics if they're a true cartographer in order to lay out the grid, depending upon what projection they're using, what area they're covering. So they need to know how to put that part of the world on a particular sized piece of paper, which involves scaling. What is the scale? They're usually done in one to a number, like one to a million would mean that a map, 1 inch on the paper represented a million inches on the ground. So there's a definite scale situation. And then he has to be good, if you will, at art. They must have a good hand, where they would take an ink and pen and draw carefully lines that depict, for instance, a shoreline, which must be a very carefully maintained width of a line, or a river, which is a tapered line. They must have a good eye for putting down type, because the type must follow what is known as the graticule, or the grid behind the map, in order to be visually attractive. So there has to be it's a bit of art, and it's a bit of science, and a bit of mathematics.
Well, let's get into that a little bit, Dean, because the original maps were all done by hand.
That's correct.
But I would assume that maps are done through computers today, probably a Macintosh computer.
Many maps are drawn on Macintosh computers, and there are a lot of software programs out there that will do that. But what we needed to do was something much more sophisticated. The map that you would see in a Mac are what are known as bitmaps, and they are pre-drawn little images, and when you call it up, it appears on the screen, and you can do some manipulation with them, but they're not calculated from raw data. What we needed to do, being in the print atlas business, where the resolution of a printing press, or the resolution a printing press can handle, is far greater than what a computer screen can deal with, we needed to be able to have a line value of 2,000 lines per inch, which means you're dealing with 4 million little pieces of ink on the surface of the paper. And depending upon what data you're showing, the database which we've constructed represents approximately 1,000 layers of coded information. There are rivers of different sizes and width. As an example, there are sometimes intermittent rivers, like out west when it's raining, there's a river there. When it's not raining, there's no river there. The Mississippi is a major river. The major river, the Mississippi, has many, many branches going into it, tributaries, and each of those is coded separately. So if you're dealing with a very large map, you might want to have a lot of those tributaries shown. If you're dealing with a very small map, those tributaries would begin to crash together, and you just get a thick, presumably blue line. So you need to be able to switch those off.
Yeah, you drop those off.
You drop those off.
You bolt them more.
I can see I'm going to be living with this for a while.
But when did Hammond switch over to computerized use of map making from the hand-drawn map?
It's only just happened. The book that's sitting in front of you, which is known as the Hammond Atlas of the World, it represents the first digitally generated world atlas in history. It's never been done before. We, in order to do that, had to take what we thought was a turnkey system where you bring in the hardware and you buy the software that's available. First, you have to build your database. We spent 5 years building the database, and along the line, we began
to... Did you create your own database?
We created our own database.
Out of scratch?
Out of scratch.
But your cartographer didn't necessarily do that. It would take a computer programmer to do that, wouldn't it?
It took an enormous number of diverse skills. It required a number of cartographers, and we've got well over 1,000 years of combined cartographic experience within the company. But the cartographer knows how to control data. They know what information to put in and what information needs to be separated from the other information. Going back to the rivers and the tributaries, they're all water, but they are on different levels.
What kind of computer did you use to do this? I noticed in the information that was sent, the computer looks very unusual because there are two screens.
The manufacturer's Intergraph, and they're a $1 billion-plus company down in Huntsville, Alabama.
It's a specially designed computer for this purpose.
Well, it's a CAD-CAM system. It's designed for engineering and drawing and, other mathematically rendered data. If you're going to build a brake for your automobile, you could do it on this type of system too, where it's an engineering type drawing. But what we had to do was modify to do exactly what we wanted to do, because there's not that many people in the map business, and since nobody had done this before, we were cutting through new ground. So what we had to do was assemble physicists, mathematicians, graphics artists, the cartographers we have in house, and begin to assemble this thing piece by piece. The software didn't exist to do what we needed to do. What we needed to do was to create a single database of the entire world, locking every known point on the globe into place mathematically. We know it's latitude and longitude, but there are no maps in the system. It's simply data. And we have to then take that data in the correct layers, scale it, shrink it, expand it, put it into place, add the levels of data that we want. We might want major highways and major rivers and the mountains and all of the cities and towns over a million so that we don't have a Baltimore. Create the map. You generate the map mathematically. That requires unprojected data so that you can go from the interrupted type projection or you can go to the Mercator type projection. You can have total flexibility on what the map does for you. This map in front of you, which is a map of the United States showing the very few cities and towns, but all the rivers and the mountains, is a conic projection. So you'll notice that the lines of latitude are curved. They start at the left and drop down a little towards the middle and come back up again. What, in effect, you're doing is looking at the globe, let's say at arm's length between your hands in front of you, and you're rotating it downward towards the south so that what you're looking at is just the picture of the U.S. And so the lines of latitude which are on the globe to your eye dip down. That's a certain type of projection. You're projecting the data so that it fills a particular page at a particular scale so that your eye can actually see what's going on.
Now, once you get all this information on the database, it must be relatively easy to do updates.
Yes. Well, that goes back to, just to finish my original thought, which is the single database instead of many databases, which is what has been done in the past. In order to scale, to take this data and be able to make either very large maps or very small maps with the proper amount of data, you must be able to scale that. That has never been done before. So this is a piece of software that we developed in-house to give you the exact right amount of data for the particular map that you're drawing and eliminate the balance of it, but not do silly things like eliminate Florida from the map of the U.S.
But because, it could be done.
Well, it could be done, but
if
it wouldn't
Florida
be very...
If Florida breaks off, you'd want to do that.
Well, then you change
rumors.
Then you change the database. I think that California's going to go first, but you change the database.
The basic database. Now, here we have topographical maps, the mountains and streams and marshes and everything.
Sure.
This is based on the original database. Is this like
the maps you have in front of you are hand-done models. This is what's called the Terrascape maps, and they are actually...
It's not the same.
That is. What you have there, the map in front of you, which is the South American Optimal Conformal, is the most accurate map of South America that has ever been made. It comes off of data which was captured through satellite imagery, and it was mathematically molded to give you the least possible distortion of that given area. So if you measure point to point from that map, you will get far more precise measurements based on the spherical distance from point to point than has ever been done before.
But the same data were not used to create these topographical maps.
That's really correct. That's an older series of maps that we created, older meaning about 2 years ago, that was created only to give you the sense of terrain. The balance of the book, which is the 160-page collection, does include mountain plates. In fact, people have told us they feel it hops right off the page. The mountains seem to be really there. You can, when kids look at this book, they reach down to touch the map to see if it actually has bumps on it. But what that also does is give you the cities and towns and other pieces of information, such as national parks or forests or reservations or town areas, urban areas.
Now, the maps we're looking at now, is there a special name for the process used to create these maps, not the topographical maps, the maps we're looking at?
Well, the map you're looking at, the entire core map collection is really the marriage of two different technologies. The data that it does not include the mountains is all computer generated straight off the database. Then we have in the database what are called contours, which is, in effect, you're taking the mountains and slicing them, and by each slice you're depicting what the concentric or close to concentric polygon would be as you go down the mountains. They get bigger and bigger. Then we take that data and we create a physical model, much the same way as we do in the Terrascape maps, and then we photograph that model. So what you get is true shadowing that gives you that three-dimensional feeling. And correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't that look three-dimensional?
Yeah.
As if you could touch it. But it also gives you the ability to read an enormous amount of type on the mountains, and that's a breakthrough. That has never been done that clearly before. The feedback from the marketplace is that these are the best maps that have ever been created visually. We know ourselves that they're the prettiest, and they are, but they're also the most accurate maps that have ever been created anywhere, simply because of the ability to feed in very precise latitude, longitude, and elevation data and render it to the most mathematically accurate way.
Now, it must be a nightmare for map makers such as yourself to try to keep up with the pace of current events and the changes of all these nations.
It makes us a little crazy, but on the other hand, if there were no news, the newspapers would be out of business, and it keeps us in business. What we have done in this book is not only an atlas for today, it's actually an atlas also for tomorrow. If you look at what you would previously know as Czechoslovakia, you'll see the Czech Republic and Slovakia, which doesn't actually take place legally until January 1st, 1993. We were able to update the database when we heard about that, which is just before we went to press, and changed the data, replotted the maps, dropped them in, reset the index, which is all automatic, and away we went. So
nothing happens to change that.
Well, there's always a risk when you do something like that. Of course, there's a story of which was the capital of Germany when they reunited East and West Germany, and a few people got caught on that one. But it simply illustrates from production perspective how much more quickly and how much more accurately maps can be made. What it also does for the user is give you the prettiest maps that have ever been created. And if you'll notice, Don, there are no what are called turn pages in this atlas. If you're used to seeing a large atlas and you're sitting in a chair and you're looking at the book and you're paging through and there's a continent, let's say South America, it's at 90 degrees to the way you're sitting, so you have to turn the book 90 degrees and the front half of the book drops over your knees and it becomes a nightmare. So it really forces you in a normal atlas to be at a table. This allows you to really sit in an armchair and go through that book, travel the entire world, and never move an inch. The book is designed to be user-friendly, and you'll notice the little arrows top, bottom, left, and right of the maps gives you a very quick visual reference to the area of the map, which is to the left, in most cases to the west, or the south, or the north, or the east, so that you can do a seamless travel around the world without having to go back to the index.
Again, it's easy to use. You ever wanted to create a map or an atlas and say, this is the definitive map, this is the definitive atlas, and we don't have to do anything beyond this. This is it.
I don't think that point's ever going to happen, Don. I think at this moment,
put so much work into this. Wouldn't you like to say, this is
well, this is certainly
this is it. And I'm finished. At last, it's over.
Well, as long as nothing ever moves in the world, as long as the continents no longer drift, and as long as there's no more wars, and as long as there's no more population increases or decreases, then our job is done. Again, it depends on what you're trying to do with the book. If we wanted to create an atlas that was physically enormous of every point on Earth, you'd have to make it the size of the Earth. And that's, again, where you get into the scaling problem. You want something which is rather usable. We did a lot of research to decide what even size of of book we should create? What's the most comfortable to sit on your lap? What's the best paper grade to use? You're looking at an 80-pound matte-coated stock, which gives you the ability for the ink to sit up on the paper very crisply, but it also doesn't reflect light behind you. And you're again, trying to access the data within the atlas, presumably as quickly as you need to, or as clearly as you want to. And yes, this is the state-of-the-art atlas. There's nothing like this anywhere in the world. However, we're not going to stand still. You know, we spent 5 years building a database, and so far we've now created one snapshot, one atlas off of that. We're going to keep on going. We're having three more atlases out at slightly smaller sizes this fall. We're creating a...
What kind of atlases are they going to be?
Well, coverage-wise, it'll be similar, but price tag-wise, it'll be lower. This book is $65. We think it's the best thing on the market between, let's say, $40 and $125. A number of competitive atlases are moaning and groaning a little here because every map collection prior to this one was drawn at least 25 and in some cases over 50 years ago. These are the atlases that you see on the shelves today. It doesn't mean that they haven't been updated in that long. It means the original research was done then. There was no satellite imagery available to check these points, so the precision of the locations of points and towns and even the shapes and size of oceans and lakes change. And all that work was originally done decades ago. This is the first new collection of maps that's been done since you and I were probably in high school, and that was a while ago. So,
These other atlases, they are... what I was trying to allude to was that sometimes atlases have very specific purposes, like topographical atlases or atlases that make focus on the marine world or the ocean.
This is a general purpose, all-around reference product. There are, of course, specific atlases which can be done, such as a road atlas is a specific type of atlas where you're, in most cases, not looking at the rivers because they're not particularly important to you except as it relates to fishing, which is yet a more specialized type of atlas. You can have a sports atlas, a sports guide, where you would show the rivers and streams where a certain type of fish was being caught. And, of course, the rivers to do that.
Atlases.
They will be coming off of the database, absolutely. But our real... name means World Atlas. Mm-hmm. So what we wanted to first do was reoccupy our place in the industry, which is the top-line World Atlas publisher, and dominate that position. So step number one is done. It's right in front of you.
And you've got the database from which these other atlases can spring.
Absolutely correct. So now it's just a matter of cranking up the engine and deciding what's the best, what does the market want? What do we want to show the market? What can we bring to people's eyes that they've never seen before?
So what are the cartographers on your staff doing now?
Oh, they're giggling. They're having a ball.
How do they keep busy in between atlases?
Oh, well, there's always update, and that's traditional in the business. There's never a time when these folks aren't referring to journals, newspapers, government,
So they're constantly working?
Constantly.
And they're on the staff?
Constantly, oh, yes.
These are staff. How many do you have?
Well, there's over 100 people in the company, and, of course, since that's what we create is maps, and that's all we create, a good portion of those are cartographers. Now, again, a cartographer does the full scale of everything. They mentally create the map, they then do the research all the way through to the finished product, but you can break that process up into the research element, into the indexing element, into the statistical element, into the drafting element, into the automated drafting element. So there are specialists on staff who do one part of the job and pass it on to the next person who does the next part of the job. Where it's a lot of fun is when you see it coming out of the plotter. You see the work that has been done all through that process, and the line work is so crisp and clear and clean and precise. It's rather thrilling. It's simply better than any cartographer could have been done. And the next logical question is, how do the old line cartographers feel about all this? They're having a ball. They have never had the ability to let their minds wander into areas that they really wanted to go over the last number of decades in many cases. The technology wasn't there or the time wasn't there to do these what-ifs, you know, similar to a spreadsheet. What if I change this number? What if I add more shadow to the mountains? What if I change the water from blue to red? What happens then? You can do silly things, and a lot of things, of course, make no sense, but it gives you the flexibility to be really creative and to let your mind wander. And so what's happening is we're creating product that wouldn't have been done before. We have a projection called the Bond projection, which is an equal area projection. It means that every continent is the exact proportion as it is to the other continent. You know, Greenland is actually the real size of Greenland, but to do that, in effect, you ink up a ball, a globe, and you roll around the piece of paper so that every point on the globe touches the paper once and only once, and what you end up with is a heart-shaped map. And so we used that a couple of years ago on our Valentine's cards for the company. But you can center it anywhere. You can rotate that so you can show the world centered on Australia or New York City or North Pole or virtually wherever you want to. You wouldn't take the time to manually create maps like that if you had to do it manually because it would take too much time and energy. Now you can do it in a couple of minutes and see what it looks like. So you're able to really be creative.
Well, a lot of changes. Well, I can see, Dean Hammond, that you're justifiably proud of this beautiful atlas of the world. And I thank you very, very much.
Don, thanks for inviting me. I had a ball.